Well, you heard the bishop refer to the gathering of Anglican primates in London next January. So is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, trying to achieve the impossible to satisfy the demands of liberal Anglicans for a church that's totally inclusive, or conservatives who want a biblically orthodox church? The Reverend Dr. Stephen Burns is Associate Dean of Trinity College Theological School in Melbourne, an expert in the worldwide Anglican community. What does he think Justin Welby is trying to achieve?
He's wanting to promote understanding of the different contexts in which Anglican Christians around the world live, and a more mutual understanding of the pressures that Anglicans in different contexts experience in relation to their wider cultures. And he's been very clear about that. But there's much that we don't know.
But we do know, Stephen, there is disunity throughout the Anglican Communion right now. Give us an idea of the sort of different poles that there are. Theological, ideological, cultural poles.
The key touchstone at the moment, lots of the blaze, comes around issues in human sexuality. And in 2003, when the Episcopal Church, which is largely based in the United States, consecrated as a bishop an openly homosexual person, as the Bishop of New Hampshire, this led to considerable consternation around the Anglican Communion. There were precedents for what the church in the United States did, in that there had been other issues in the recent history of the Anglican Communion which people in other parts of the world had quite strongly disagreed with. One had been about the ordination of women, and earlier than that, at around 1970, the church in New Zealand decided to welcome to communion unconfirmed children. And at the time, this was very, very controversial. Mm. But the current touchstone is certainly about homosexuality and different approaches to it.
Well, some of those approaches, Stephen, are very different. I mean, you mentioned there the ordination of Bishop Gene Robinson back in 2003. There's now a openly lesbian bishop, mm-hmm. Mary Glasspool, in Los Angeles, an Episcopal or Anglican bishop. But then at the other end, you've got people like Archbishop Stanley Natagali in Uganda, who's supported mm-hmm. very punitive laws against gay and lesbian people in Uganda and Nigeria. So the poles are pretty wide apart.
This is true. One of the things that Justin Welby is appealing for is understanding of how different positions around the Anglican Communion have arisen in relationship to their local cultures. So, for instance, if we take the United States as an example, gay marriage has been possible in some states in the US since 2002. Massachusetts was the first state to legalize gay marriage. As we know, of course, earlier this year, it will become legal in every state in the United States. And so in the Episcopal Church's promotion of openly gay people to leadership roles in the church, and also now, since the last General Convention of the Episcopal Church, proposals to revise the marriage rite when reference to a man and a woman being married are going to be changed to references simply to the couple. The church in the States is engaging with its own cultural turns. Mm. And I think if we were to then look at the situation in Uganda, we find a very difficult promotion of what was called the Anti-Homosexuality Bill. The Anglican Church has in many ways supported it, but in other ways, it has resisted some of its most harsh dimensions. Mm. So the church has, in that context, been part of pulling from the Anti-Homosexuality Bill a clause about the death penalty. Mm. Other things remain very troubling about the Anti-Homosexuality Bill. And yet part of the cultural context out of which the Ugandan experience is emerging is a history in the Anglican Church where in the 1880s, Christian young people who refused to be part of a tribal chief's homosexual orgies were burnt at the stake. So there are cultural contexts that the Archbishop of Canterbury is trying to promote more understanding of.
Could it be, Stephen, that the only way that some Anglican dioceses will relate to other Anglican dioceses is not directly? They won't even be able to be part of the same church services together. They'll simply refuse, is through the person of the Archbishop of Canterbury. And that's going to constantly require a compromise candidate, isn't it?
Perhaps anything could happen in terms of the structures of the communion. I mean, I think we could look at our own region and see different possibilities. If we were to look at the church in Aotearoa, New Zealand and Polynesia, the Anglican church there operates with three tikanga, as they're called, three synods within a wider synod. One synod is composed of Maori people. Another synod is composed of Polynesian people. A third synod is composed of Pakeha, white settler people. And the three have a certain level of independence and a certain level of cooperation about particular issues. It's possible that the wider communion would move to some kind of arrangement like that. It's possible that an Australian model would be adopted, where historically dioceses have developed more independence from one another than is the case in many parts of the Anglican world, where theological differences have shaped the ethos of diocese more strongly than in other places, so that dioceses become more monocultural theologically. That kind of model could emerge, but we don't actually have any proposals on the table.
This is presented as a north-south division of the church, the northern hemisphere versus the southern hemisphere, the developed world versus the developing world. But it's a bit more mixed up. I mean, what can you tell us about the role, for example, of the Sydney Anglican Diocese, which has been very instrumental in the Global Anglican Futures Conference and something called the Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans, which does take the more biblically conservative line and is seen as, if you like, seeding this dissenting movement?
It is indeed the case that often what is presented as a rather stark north-south divide is in fact much more complex. The Anglican community in the United States has itself divided in conservative and more liberal directions, so that a group has removed itself from the Episcopal Church. It's now known as the Anglican Church in North America. It's not in full communion with the Archbishop of Canterbury at the moment, although he has invited their Archbishop to this gathering in January. It's true also that Sydney is a prime mover at the conservative end of the Anglican Communion and has been a significant shaper of some of the conservative arguments about homosexuality, about the ordination of women, and about other issues of biblical interpretation and doctrinal formulation. So Sydney has not at all been quiet in current contest within the Anglican Communion.
Let me just read to you a comment from the Reverend Sally Hitchener, who's a prominent gay priest in the Church of England. She told The Guardian of the Archbishop of Canterbury's decision to hold this special meeting of primates, "This is a positive step for all sorts of reasons. Quote, we can't hold together from a place like England, where an Archbishop of Canterbury could be in a gay marriage, possibly in my lifetime, to somewhere like Uganda, where they want to imprison people for gay sex." So are there liberals who are simply saying, well, we won't be able to be in a church that has anything less than a complete acceptance of same-sex marriage up to the point of having a gay Archbishop of Canterbury?
Well, that's a provocative comment.
I know it is a provocative
from the English priest. I mean, again, we have very, very diverse perspectives represented within the communion. One mark on which Anglicans would typically agree is that their perspectives are worked out in engagement with Scripture. So no Anglican is going to propose an argument which they themselves deem to be unscriptural. Presumably, the Reverend Sally Hinchiner proposes that her view is biblical, just as others whose views are very, very different will propose that their views are biblical. And I think that what the Archbishop of Canterbury is inviting is attention to the contexts in which different engagements with Scripture are made in local contexts. And that seems to me to be at the heart of what's been invited in this current initiative of the Archbishop.
Stephen Burns of Trinity Theological College in Melbourne joining me, Andrew West, on the Religion and Ethics Report.